You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
De Bruyne! Well, that was pure class.
Yaremchuk, two in double quick time for Ukraine.
And here's a great opportunity to make it two. And Denzel Dumfries is there.
Day six was full of quality, Chris, and two more teams are through.
Yes, it really was. Congratulations to the Netherlands and Belgium. Kevin De Bruyne was brilliant for them. Ukraine were pretty good too.
Yeah, and it's going to be another huge day at the tournament. Marcus Rashford, Harry Kane and Steve Clarke help us preview that mouth-watering match between England and Scotland.
We'll also hear from Marek Hamsik and Slatko Dalic, and we take you from Glasgow to St. Petersburg via London at UEFA Euro 2020.
Okay, welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm joined by my co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, how are we doing?
Very good, thank you very much.
Yeah, some enjoyable matches today.
Really was. Huge emotion in Copenhagen, Rob, as Denmark and Belgium played out a real thriller in honour of Christian Eriksen, of course. Some wonderful moments of true unity, which we'll discuss further shortly. And Belgium threw after coming from behind to win that game 2-1 amid a really special atmosphere at Parken Stadium. The Dutch also, as I mentioned, into the last 16, they were very, very impressive against Austria. And because Ukraine won, Rob, we have an absolute corker on Monday.
Yeah.
When Ukraine meet Austria in Bucharest, that is a proper winner-takes-all match to go through alongside the Dutch.
And more to look forward to. Also with us is commentator and journalist Jackie Oatley. Jackie, great to have your company.
Hi there, Rob. Absolute pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, your first show with the campaign. You've obviously been watching the tournament for the past week. What have you made of it so far?
Oh, I've loved it. It's brilliant. It's better than having a proper job, isn't it? Just being able to actually just sit and watch all this wonderful football. We've seen some great goals. Schick against Scotland, I must have seen 50 times. I think I've also seen Sabitzer's sublime pass for Leiner's goal for Austria on Sunday so many times as well. The emotion, as Chris talked about there, with the Denmark situation. And we have the rivalry of England versus Scotland still to come.
Yeah, we're going to get to that very, very shortly in the show. Also, in honour of Kevin De Bruyne, who, by the way, was unreal today, we've been asking listeners to tell us who they think are the best passers of a ball at Euro 2020. Sublime assist for that equaliser against Denmark. Jackie, best passer at Euro 2020, what do you reckon?
It's a tricky one, but Calvin Phillips has a fabulous range of passing for England. Expecting to see plenty more from him, but Paul Pogba as well of France. And we haven't seen Ruben Neves yet of Portugal, but he has an extraordinary range of passing. Yet to come off the bench, though.
We're going to hear it in a moment, Rob, but maybe the whole of the Belgium team, because one of their goals today was very, very special and involved Thorgan Hazard, Eden Hazard and Yuri Tielemans, all one-touch stuff. We are seeing some, I think as the days go on now, we are already beginning to have a collection of absolute crackers for the potential goal of the tournament.
Hashtag Euroshow to get in touch on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Dalek 707 says Bale's been pretty good. How about his two assists the other day? I mean, his one for Aaron Ramsey was ridiculous. And Vettel's has gone for Jorginho in the middle of the park for Italy. Keep those coming in honour of De Bruyne today. Hashtag Euroshow. Well, Denmark against Belgium at the Parken Stadion in Copenhagen was always going to be an emotional occasion following Christian Eriksen's medical emergency last Saturday. Play stopped on the pitch after 10 minutes. That's Eriksen's number for Denmark. And the fans, players, coaches and referee gave a round of applause.
Yeah, it really was a very special moment that, Rob. And actually, it wasn't the only thing that happened on a day which, as you mentioned, was always going to be pretty emotional, wasn't it? It started before kickoff when Simon Kjær released a statement talking about the events on Saturday and how he was going to go and play for Christian Eriksen in this match. And then Belgium really played their part as well. And at the coin toss of the two captains, Jan Vertonghen handed Kjær a signed Belgium shirt with Christian 10 on the back. And I tell you what, the national anthems, there weren't too many dry eyes in Copenhagen. It was a really special day, actually. And then after that, the match was absolutely sensational. The actual football was for me, one of the most enjoyable games we've seen at this summer's tournament so far.
Well, Kasper Hjulmand was saying that Ericsson's hospital was basically next to the stadium. He can even see the stadium from the hospital as well. I'm sure he watched the game. It was a cracker. Belgium were brilliant for the second half after going a goal down.
Given away here to Højbjerg, and Poulsen is in! Poulsen scores! What a start for Denmark! Lukaku here for Belgium. The cutback for De Bruyne, and there's the tap-in! Thorgan Hazard for Belgium ties it up at 1-1. Eden Hazard, De Bruyne! Well, that was pure class and a masterpiece from a true artist in Kevin De Bruyne.
And the flow of the game, of course, the Danes were all over Belgium first half, rattling into tackles, pressurising them, not letting them have the ball, got their early goal. But then the introduction of Kevin De Bruyne at half-time was the game-changer. We'll get to that in a moment. First, let's hear from the Denmark and Barcelona forward, Martin Brathwaite, who said it was an emotional day.
I think days like this, it's just shows you what kind of privilege we have to go and play football here, and also shows you the support from the whole country today. It was just amazing. We really appreciate and we're really grateful for all the love that we're feeling tonight. It was like extra motivation to go and do even better today. I felt like the boys, they looked really sharp from the first second of the game to the end. So I felt everyone, they were ready and they were just in the zone when the game got started. Yeah, we know everything is still possible. We have to go and do our part. So that's the focus for Monday against Russia.
Well, Jackie, they certainly in that first half seemed motivated by the occasion and wanting to perform, as we heard on the show yesterday, actually, for Christian Eriksen.
Yes, it was difficult to predict how they would be, given the amount of emotion and everything they've gone through in the past few days. I mean, were they going to come out all guns blazing as they did? Was it going to be a cagey start? Were they going to be drained? How much have they slept? We couldn't possibly know any of these things. And I was just picturing Eriksen watching this first half performance, and he would have been so proud of what he'd seen from them. But I couldn't also help but wonder how this was going to transpire in the second half. I promise I'm not being wise after the event, but you did wonder, given what they've been through and the energy they'd expended, were they really going to be able to continue at that pace and commitment, and bearing in mind the talent we knew that Belgium had on the bench, and so it proved to be. They probably didn't want to play De Bruyne at all, but he was there when they needed him and he produced the performance that we know he can, and plenty to work on for Belgium. But I just thought, what a stunning match, stunning first half performance, and the commitment from Denmark throughout the game, utterly commendable.
Can I just talk about the second goal very quickly? Because after Romelu Lukaku had danced down the right touchline with some brilliant quick feet, I then noted down, Rob, Tielemans, Thorgan Hazard, Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, all one-touch passes and a first-time finish for De Bruyne. Oh, on his wrong foot.
Other notable performances, of course, Romelu Lukaku outstanding in the second half. Mikael Damsgaard, the player who actually replaced Eriksen in the 11, was superb with his technical attacking play for Denmark. Let's hear from Belgium's head coach, Roberto Martinez.
Well, the emotions of very, very proud of the players, because this was a real test that we haven't had for a long time. Unfortunately, we never had fans in the stadiums, and you could see that the first 20 minutes we was almost shell-shocked. We went ourselves. We couldn't do what we normally do. You have to give great credit to Denmark. They adapted very well. They used the fans in their advantage. But then it's how you react. And I think that's the emotion that I have now, that we got a team that is fully, fully committed to each other, that they are with big hearts, and all they want to do is their best for winning games. And that's in the middle of this hostile atmosphere. It shows you that the team is progressing time after time.
They showed their fight to turn it around. Belgium striker Romelu Lukaku gave lots of praise to Denmark. Beware, by the way, there's a very noisy crowd in the background.
Tough game mentally. Denmark started really well. They deserve more today for the intensity that they play with, the creativity, the dedication. You have to know what they did today is really, after what they've been through, playing like this today, they deserve all the credit. But yeah, we're lucky today to win. But it was not the best game for us.
Romelu Lukaku there. And I think, Jackie, you know, a lot of people were tentative about putting too much pressure on Belgium to deliver at this tournament. But big statement with two notable wins, one comfortable and one a fight back.
Yes, they had to show a different side of their game. We know about the talent, the individual talent, but it's fascinating to watch Belgium because they do have pressure on their shoulders. They're a great collection of individuals until they really go to a final and ideally win something. It's great being a world number one side with talented individuals, but Roberto Martinez is going to be judged on what he manages to do and whether he can make this team to be greater than the sum of its parts. And so, yes, maximum points from two games and had to fight against the emotion of the occasion today, and they proved they were up to that task. And now, going into the knockout stages, will be fascinating to see what they can do.
Yeah, can this golden generation deliver the title that they so desperately seek? Meanwhile, in Group C, the Netherlands beat Austria at the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam, making it two wins from two for the Dutch.
1-0, perfectly placed. Memphis Depay kept his cool on a hot evening in Amsterdam. And here's a great opportunity to make it two. And Denzel Dumfries is there. And Dumfries makes it two tonight.
Yeah, he gets his second of the tournament, Denzel Dumfries, after his winner against Ukraine. Reminder, both teams just made one change for this one. Mikhail Gregoric in for Sasha Kalajic in the Austria attack. Marko Arnautovic suspended. But the Dutch had Matthias de Ligt, who was very, very good at centre-back, made one notable slide challenge in the second half to deny Austria an opportunity. His return maybe shored things up a little bit at the back, Chris, but I think it's the attacking play that's really got people excited about the Oranje at this tournament.
Yeah, and remember, before the tournament, the great discussion, which I know we've mentioned before on the show, was we should be playing 4-3-3 in the Netherlands, which, you know, they invented that. They invented that style of football. And there was even a plane which was flown over the Dutch training base in Zeist saying, play 4-3-3, Frank de Boer. But he absolutely stuck to his principles. And they have been so attacking in this 5-3-2. And Denzel Dumfries has probably been one of the standout performers so far at Euro 2020. He's playing right wing back. He may as well be playing right wing. He's so far forward. And actually, what they're also doing, and we saw again today, is the centre-halves are bombing forward as well and are underlapping Dumfries on one side and Van Aanholt on the other. Now, the first goal came from a penalty where Dumfries was fouled, but the danger initially was Stefan de Vrij, the right-sided one of the three centre-halves, in the right-wing position. Now, that is pretty thrilling, and Frank de Boer has worked on that somehow. We have seen it in some other leagues. When it's effective, it's very effective, and I think the Dutch have caught out a couple of teams so far in doing that. They're probably one of the most entertaining teams that we've seen in these 6 days of the tournament so far.
Yeah, and I have to say, Chris, I find it so odd when fans demand a certain system. What a strange thing to do. I mean, there's tradition and there's getting the best out of the players you have available. And that is what a coach is paid to do. And that is what De Boer is trying to do. And he's doing it to good effect so far. Okay, so Austria are not going to win this tournament necessarily. But the Netherlands, they need to be a lot more clinical, it has to be said. Yeah. But the manager, absolutely within his rights to play this formation as he sees it is the best fit for these players he has.
I think we really have to give a shout out to Gini Wijnaldum here, who's just completed a move, of course, to Paris Saint-Germain from Liverpool. He's taken the captain's arm, but he really looks like a leader, Jackie. And he was all action. I mean, he's just blustering into tackles, breaking forward 20 metres of the ball, laying off the right weight of passes. He really has developed into an outstanding central midfield player in the last few years.
Absolutely. And you do wonder about the build-up to this tournament. Usually transfers tend to get done after a tournament. I mean, leaving it to the agents during it. He'll be relieved that it was out of the way, but it must have been playing on his mind a bit. He seemed to be heading for Barcelona and then PSG. But it doesn't seem to have affected him at all. And you know, we've seen over the years what he can do at Liverpool. Just a wonderful talent. But again, with the Dutch, it's a case of can they go all the way?
And we also saw a bit of Ryan Gravenberch, which you're excited about, Chris.
Yeah, oh, look, you know, I watch a lot of the Eredivisie. I know you do as well, Rob. I think he's such a gifted player. He's such an Ajax player. He's such a Dutch player. And he comes into that best passers, by the way, which you're asking tonight, hashtag Euroshow. And there was a really nice stat which came up. So Ryan Gravenberch came on. And apparently the age difference between him and Martin Stekelenburg, his club teammate and his international teammate tonight, the biggest gap ever 19 years, 236 days between them.
That's not bad, is it?
And that's, that is, of course, for a European Championship game. But that's pretty good. That's what? Definitely one generation between them. Maybe two generations between them.
Do you think they play music to each other and say, have you heard of this?
I hope so. I really hope so. Yeah.
What are the different styles they're playing? Bit of Elton John in there, do you reckon?
Maybe.
Bit of Phil Collins.
who do you reckon is the best passer in this team, by the way? Is it Frankie de Jong? I mean, he was wonderful at times, turning out of possession and moving the ball forward. Is he the best passer
probably,
in this team?
Oh, well, look, this is the Dutch, isn't it? Right, so it's really hard with them, given the way they have to play. Daley Blind has a wonderful pass on him as well, but probably is Frankie de Jong. Definitely in terms of accuracy, Frankie de Jong, he very, very rarely misplaces one, does he?
Yeah, Broski on Twitter has gone for the aforementioned Frankie de Jong. Keep your messages coming in. Hashtag Euroshow on the Euroshow, of course. Also in Group C, Ukraine claimed a hard-fought win over North Macedonia. Here's how it played out in Bucharest.
Goalkeeper has to be on his toes again, and this time he is beaten by Yarmolenko. Ukraine go in front. Yarmolenko, Yaremchuk. Two in double quick time for Ukraine. And now North Macedonia get a penalty. Alioski defied. North Macedonia won't be denied. Alioski has pulled it back to 2-1.
It wouldn't be enough. They did fight for the result, North Macedonia. And then, of course, there was another save penalty. I mean, Alioski put in the rebound, but there was a missed penalty at the other way. Malinovsky for Ukraine. Chris, now that's only two of the six penalties at this tournament have been scored.
I know, it's extraordinary stat,
yeah.
Right?
And Ronaldo and Memphis have scored theirs.
And we're not even in the knockout stages when we might get a penalty shootout as well. Well, maybe they're brushing up on their skills now so that if it gets to that clutch moment, they'll get it right. But
let's give some praise to the keepers.
I was going to say,
give the goalkeepers some love.
Good saves. And I always feel sorry for a goalkeeper when they make a save and then the striker or the midfielder, whoever's taking it, just tucks in the rebound. You think, they're almost the hero, and then they're just picking the ball out the back.
We will hear from Gianni Alioski shortly. Jackie, what did you make of this game from a Ukraine point of view? They seemed heartbroken after that attempted comeback that fell slightly short against the Dutch, but they seemed to be imposing themselves in that first half.
Yeah, they did very much so, and you wondered whether it could be a few more goals than that, but North Macedonia bringing it back to 2-1. I thought it was quite bold of Shevchenko to take off both his goal scorers in, I think it was around the 70th minute, saving them presumably for the next game, but fair play to Shevchenko. He had faith in his substitutes, and it did come off. I think he would have received a lot of criticism had it not done, but there was an opportunity right at the end, if you recall, Trajkovski firing just wide, which would have levelled things up. And I think there would have been a bit of criticism for that. But I love watching Yarmolenko play. I mean, we see him in the Premier League, but not very often. It was his fourth goal in three games for Ukraine, but no Premier League goals all season for West Ham, just one start. And he's been hampered there with an Achilles injury in particular, given what that does to you when you're trying to push off and be explosive. But he's not really a David Moyes kind of player, is he? He's not a sort of a 90 minutes kind of work ethic kind of man like Bowen Lingard and Fornal. So, and he's only got a year left on his contract. So I just wonder if he's maybe in the shop window a little bit.
Well, speaking of Yarmolenko, Lindsay Hooper's been at the UEFA Fan Village in London for us all week, and she caught up with a very special guest after Ukraine's win.
I'm with Ina Yarmolenko, who's just watched her husband, Andrei Yarmolenko, score for Ukraine, set up a goal, and they have won. They've got 3 points. What's your reaction to that?
I'm so happy. I'm over the moon because this is our first win, I think, after seven losses. This is our first win. I'm very excited, thank God. This team is amazing. I think they gave everything they have for this win. It's just amazing.
I'm sure you were in touch with Andre after that first goal that he scored against the Netherlands, which was some finish. Is he in his element right now?
I think this is his a signature goal. That's the goals he made quite a few of these goals, and we are very proud for him. It's just amazing, and today he scored. Finally, he's going to be very happy.
Oh, what do you think this does for his children who are here watching as well, that they get to see daddy on the big screen?
I think it's just crazy emotions when you see your dad. This is like an example. I really hope they see that and they take that sport when they grow up. They would like to be footballers, they would like to be in sports because of this great example of their dad.
Oh, brilliant. And one more game to go in the group stages. How are you feeling about that one?
Oh, I really hope after this win, our boys gonna have these crazy emotions. I think our fans will be pushing them to win another game and finally go further.
And you're obviously London-based with Andre playing for West Ham United. Will you be back at the Football Village for the next one?
I wish, but I'm going back to Ukraine on Saturday, and I think I want to watch the other game with all of my family too.
Oh, well, that will be some atmosphere. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Absolutely.
Inna Yarmolenko there with our very own Lindsay Hooper doing some great work. And it is a little reminder, Chris. I mean, it's so funny when you hear all the international players talking about this tournament. They all talk about their families much more than they do about their club football. They say, you know, my friends and family are watching this back home and it makes me so proud.
Yeah, and of course, this is a different tournament for all the players. It's been a different last 18 months because they have been in these bias.
And they're away
bubbles.
From their families, aren't they? A lot more than normal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that support back home is absolutely massive. And you could hear the pride and the passion there. And I'm not surprised because, look, we've known about Yarmolenko's class and ability for a very long time. And when he puts that Ukraine shirt on, more often than not, he does deliver. And the goal was excellent. He was in the right place at the right time. The assist for the second for Yaremchuk was really, really silky.
Maybe it's something we can get onto the next show. Those guys who, obviously, they're brilliant at club level, but something happens in a national team shirt, and Yarmolenko is one of those. North Macedonia's Premier League star, Gianni Alioski, reflects on a second straight defeat for his team.
In the game was two different halves that we play. The first half was, my opinion, we give them a lot of space. We didn't close the space, we have a lot of room to create a lot of chances because we didn't did the pressing like we wanted and we was not such aggressive. I don't know, maybe we was a little too defense. We needed to attack more. Yeah, then we received two goals that it's hard to turn this result, but how we play the second half is like this, we should play like from the first minute. Now it's too late to say why we didn't play from the first minute like this. It's football.
Gianni Alioski there. And Oleksandr Zinchenko was right when he said Ilkay Gundogan told him, be careful, they play good football. And thinking of that chipped offside goal for Goran Pandev in the first half, my word, that would have been another sensational moment for him had the goal stood. North Macedonia beaten by Ukraine in Bucharest. Keep your messages coming in, by the way, using the hashtag Euroshow. We're asking you for your best passes in honour of Kevin De Bruyne. Sislak has gone for one I think Jackie mentioned earlier in Paul Pogba. Range of passing against Germany the other day was ridiculous. And the Welsh Pirlo, Joe Allen.
Well, do you know, as you said that, I was thinking Aaron Ramsey. And then I thought, oh no, Joe Allen. Yeah.
No, it's Joe Allen, isn't it? Okay, keep them coming in. Hashtag Euroshow. Chris, this is the point of the show where we get to some team news from teams not directly involved in the games we're talking about.
Yep.
Helps with fantasy football as well on Euro2020.com and on the app. So let's start with the Italian camp. They won, of course, the other night to put their place in the round of 16, but they've got an injury concern at the back.
Yeah, we saw that Giorgio Chiellini went off shortly after I had a goal disallowed as well. He suffered a flexor injury and they're unclear how long he's going to be out for. Italy saying, though, it's not serious and he's going to be judged day by day. Of course, their final match in their group is against Wales on Sunday. Before then, they are going to be preparing for a last 16 tie.
OK, Portugal
trained with 25 today because young Nuno Mendes was in the gym with a minor thigh injury, but they've recovered well. All of their major superstars have recovered well from that opening victory against Hungary.
Poland, we know that Grzegorz Krakowiak is suspended for the next game after his red card.
Yeah, and Paulo Sousa confirming today that everybody else is available at the moment, no injury. So it's only Krakowiak who is going to miss that, what is for Poland an enormous second game.
And a big one for the Swiss, actually, in goal, Jan Sommer. And there was talk he might play in that second group game, but he has actually left the Swiss camp now.
He has, in order, because he's got the birth of his second child imminently. So we hope that all goes well. And of course, from a footballing point of view, the Swiss will hope that he can get to Baku now for that enormous.
He's gone back
match.
To Germany. He's flown to Cologne, hasn't he? So it's a long journey back to Baku. So we'll see if Jan Sommer will play in the next game for the Swiss. By the way, in fantasy football, if you've got Denzel Dumfries, well done. 14 points for the one penalty, clean sheet and a goal. Kevin De Bruyne, who was a doubt on the app, 10 points.
Do you know what, Rob? I just wonder now, if anyone hasn't got Denzel Dumfries, I bet by match day three, it'll be like, because you can see how many percentage of all the players have
84%
got,
of people.
99% have got Denzel Dumfries.
Okay, you can play that on your Euro2020.com and on the app. Come out, we're going to take a look back to the good old days, Euro 96.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Welcome back to the show with me, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott and Jackie Oatley. Great games on the way on Friday. Chris, remind us of them.
Yeah, three more. Do you know what, Rob? Next week we have four games on a couple of days. So just to mark your card for that, that is going to be busy. So it starts in St. Petersburg, Sweden against Slovakia from Group E. And Slovakia can go through if they win that game. And then it's Group D, Hampden Park in Glasgow for Croatia against the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic can go through if they win that game. And then, of course, the final game of tomorrow on Friday. The final game of Friday is England against Scotland at Wembley.
Okay, well, let's start with that one. It is the world's oldest international fixture. It's also 25 years since their last Euro meeting when Paul Gascoigne inspired England to victory. Players and the managers from both sides have been looking back at that iconic match at Euro 96.
Waiting is over, the battle is underway, and a very juicy battle it should be. A goal for Shearer! Alan Shearer scores in Euro 96 again.
As players, you want to play in the biggest, most historical games, and I think for our careers, this is going to be up there with one of the games that we remember for the rest of our careers.
Oh, Shangham's all alone! Great stop by Gorham. It's Jurey! Wonderful save by Seaman. Scotland players claiming that it went over the line.
Scotland, England, our European Championship, don't get any bigger than that.
I'm sure you'll see a big reaction and players who are hungry to win the game and obviously do it for everyone in Scotland.
McCall, that's Jury. Penalty! England have conceded a penalty again. Now it's Gary McAllister of Scotland.
Have you seen David Seaman's penalty save in the Euro 96 game against Scotland?
No, I've never seen it. I'll have a look up on it in my downtime. We've spoke about that moment, you know, 96 the other day, and I was a bit too young for that.
And Seaman, and England celebrates joyously.
I think it's more about embracing it, embracing the fixture, understanding the importance of what it means to the fans, but not letting that cloud any judgment, because it is a big occasion.
It's going to be a big game, one to look forward to. Obviously, it's got great history in the game.
And here's Gascoigne. Brilliant play! Oh! Take a bow for that! That's unbelievable! You won't see a better goal than that in any international tournament.
There was the euphoria of going 2-0 ahead, but also then there was the quality of the goal, which of course was so outstanding. Without a doubt, one of the most memorable games for me with England.
They don't come much bigger than this one. It's a game that the players all want to play in. What we have to do is make sure that we're prepared properly for it.
Scotland all together shake their heads as Paul Gascoigne raises his fists in triumph.
We know the rivalry, but I think, I certainly haven't felt the need to build that up with the players. I want them to approach it like any other game of football and focus on playing well.
Hopefully they can make us all smile at the end of the game. I've spent a long part of my life in England, never mind my football playing and coaching career. I want Scotland to win, desperately.
Oh, we're up for it now. England versus Scotland at Euro 2020. Steve Clarke at the end there, of course. Marcus Rashford, Kevin Nisbet, Jordan Pickford and Gareth Southgate in there. Chris, very quickly, you're very upset that Jordan Pickford's never seen that David Seaman penalty save.
I mean, I'm showing my age, but I just thought, surely would have seen it. It's etched in my memory and anyone of my generation's memory that the penalty from McAllister, the save, and then seconds later, Gazza's goal. Surely after he said that, surely someone in the camp. Gareth Southgate must have been like, Jordan.
Take my iPad. I'm sure, look, Jackie, he will have seen the Gazza goal, an iconic goal from European football.
Oh, my goodness. That brings back some memories, I tell you what. I'm still, my heart's pounding just listening to it all. I mean, even that you two are young whippersnappers, you're probably watching on your mum or dad's knee, I would have thought, in front of the telly.
Some of us were, I was 11.
Well, exactly. Not. Well, maybe. Why not? But some of us were in the pub at university and the beer was flying and it was just the best atmosphere. Oh my goodness, the music, the football's coming home, everything. And yes, sorry, back to the game. It was it was extraordinary. I mean, how, but people always talk in cliches about these things. Oh, you couldn't write the scripts. But really, that probably is something you'd try to write, isn't it? I mean, that save and the Gazza goal and the squirty water bottle, they planned everything after what had happened before the tournament. The whole thing, there was just so much to it, and just the Gazza brilliance and the poor old Colin Hendry. But wonderful match, wonderful tournament, and we're already getting certain drama like that. But you just wonder what's going to happen in this game. I can't picture what the script's going to be for this one.
And for England, it was that match that really ignited the tournament, because they, as hosts, had drawn their opening game. Scotland had drawn against the Dutch as well. And you know, had Scotland won that game, then they would have been through, and who knows what would have happened to England. And it's interesting that Jackie mentioned that famous English song, Three Lions. It was really born that day because there was an interview with one of the two who wrote it, and he said that at that stage it wasn't really that famous. And then the guy who was in charge of the music at full time just chose it to be the song, and it took off. And there is a famous line in it which says, 30 years of hurt. Now, this makes us old. It's now 55 years of hurt.
Since England won a major
tournament. So it's almost as long between 1966 and 1996 as it is between Euro 96 and now.
I think we all forgot Le Tournoi, didn't we, back in 1995? Does that not count as a major?
Definitely not. Yeah, okay. Even if Roberto Carlos did score that crazy goal.
Well, of course, when the sides met roughly 4 years ago, they played out a thrilling 2-2 draw in Scotland. Harry Kane got the late equaliser that day and can't wait to get going here.
Yeah, I think we're excited as well, you know. It's going to be a big game, one to look forward to. Obviously, it's got great history in the game. So, yeah, excited. Obviously, we started well in the group with a win. So we know the aim for us is to try and qualify tomorrow night. So that's what our focus is on, and hopefully we can do that. Yeah, it'll be a tough game. I think kind of their teamwork is their greatest strength, to be honest. They've got a great togetherness. I thought they was unlucky against the Czech Republic the other day. I thought they played quite well and just didn't quite go their way. So we're ready for a tough game against a very good side, and like you said, with great experience as well. So we have to be fully focused on us and what we need to do and try and exploit some of their weaknesses. But overall, we're expecting a really tough game. Yeah, there's definitely stuff we can improve on. I think the game the other day was a really good start for us against a really tough side in Croatia. But we played well, we managed the game well, we had really good spells in that game. But of course, there's room to improve. It'll be a totally different type of game, obviously, weather especially, with it being a night game tomorrow night. So yeah, we just have to do what we do and focus on us, and hopefully that'll be enough to get the win.
Well, the England camp is trying to keep things cool. Let's speak to our reporter in the camp, Simon Hart. Simon, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, I understand you're back in your hotel room already and you've got room service that could interrupt this interview at any time.
Well, you know, it's all about priorities.
Absolutely right. Speaking of priorities, England, big game against Scotland, of course. We've been talking about Euro 96 on the show already. And from what I understand, that's been a theme of the discussion in the camp, that they've got to play the game, not the occasion.
Gareth Southgate spoke about it in his press conference. And, you know, he got across the idea that the importance was to just play a game and not the occasion of England-Scotland, which, of course, for us, you know, supporters or journalists, you know, we love to look at the history of the fixture and, you know, the great traditions surrounding England Scotland. Whereas Southgate, you know, as a manager, as a tactician, wants it broken down into, you know, 11 players against 11 players on a pitch.
In terms of team news, there's been so much talk about Harry Maguire. What's the latest on him? Do you think he will start for England or not?
Gareth Southgate said that, you know, he's trained for 4 or 5 days and had no reaction. And Maguire himself, you know, he's feeling confident. He said he'd be involved. Here's the knock on the door.
That is fantastic.
Is this happening? Just as I was getting into my flow, here comes the three egg omelette. Just bear with me a second.
Simon, go get the omelette. While he's getting the omelette, Chris, I love this sort of head-to-head sort of battle thing, because you've got Jack Grealish saying in an interview today to UK Radio, I can't wait to crunch John McGinn, right? One of his best mates in that camp. And also Calvin Phillips and Ian Cooper having this chat. How great is it for Leeds United as a football club to have two players playing such a big game as this?
Yeah, and you could add Aston Villa into that. And this was something which was very interesting in England's first game, Rob. I think for the first time since Euro 92, there were no Manchester United or Liverpool players in England's starting 11. And actually, you look down the England team and the Scotland team, and a lot of them play, I mean, Villa and Leeds are huge clubs, but they don't play for Manchester City, Chelsea, who played in this season's UEFA Champions League final. So you can see why maybe there is that little bit more camaraderie going on.
There was also these quotes, and I saw Alex O'Henley putting these on UEFA's website today.
Are we having this chat, by the way, until Simon gets on?
Yeah, we're just waiting for
Simon
to get back. Alex O'Henley was putting on the Match Centre today about Scott McTominay, saying the prospect of facing Marcus Rashford. He says he can't wait to do it. It will be strange, because the pair have been playing together since the age of eight.
Yeah, they have.
Since the age of eight. It's absolutely crazy. Simon, you're back.
I'm back. And because of my devotion to this podcast, I'm going to let my chips go cold.
Good man.
Well, you know, if I was a true pro in the days of the old England-Scotland fixtures, I'd have a steak about 3 hours before the game.
Exactly. Exactly. Simon, you must be looking forward to this. Look, it's a game everyone's talking about. Of course, I think on paper you looked at France-Germany as the standout in terms of quality of the sides, that being a titanic tussle. But England-Scotland instantly stands out for everyone. What's it going to be like, do you think?
Wembley on Sunday was, you know, it was such a privilege to be there. You'd think Wembley a quarter full, you know, maybe doesn't have the same atmosphere, but it was incredible. The noise, just the waves of sound sort of, you know, rolling around the ground, and the chance of football's coming home. So when you think that we have England, Scotland, and we have English and Scottish fans in the stadium, I think the atmosphere will be terrific. And, you know, I really can't wait. And England started so well this tournament, and I'm excited about seeing how they'll respond to the challenge of Scotland in a different kind of challenge. You know, although Southgate's played it down, I mean, it is a derby match, and Scotland will be pumped up. And, you know, I think it'll be a really interesting contest.
Simon, we're not going to keep you long because obviously you have got something waiting for you, as we know. But you've been in and around this England camp at St George's Park. What is the mood like? Because we've read a lot about how the atmosphere Gareth Southgate creates is really good, and the players seem to really enjoy playing for England, which maybe in the past there were accusations that wasn't the case. Do you get that sense being around the players?
Yeah, there's such a relaxed atmosphere there. I mean, a couple of people made nice comments to me about two of the interviews I had. I mean, I've had a few sit-down interviews. There's great access to the players. And, you know, I've deflected that praise because basically that's because of the culture that's created. The players feel able to go and sit down and, you know, speak openly with great generosity in terms of their time. And it's a pleasure to be there. And funnily, England have moved down to Tottenham's training ground today, where they'll be staying in Spurs Lodge until after the Czech game, the third group game. And I think that they're sorry to be leaving Burton. Gareth Southgate or the squad, they arranged this, you know, just to keep things fresh. So players, you know, aren't just in one place for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. They wanted to mix it up. But because the players are so much at ease there, you know, they're sorry to leave. I mean, everything's there for them. When they got into their rooms at the very beginning of the tournament, you know, they had photographs of their family, you know, prepared for them to just to feel at home in their rooms. And this isn't just the players, this is the staff as well. So much thought has gone into it, into creating this environment. And, you know, it feels like such a perfect place to be and to play football and to just be around, you know. I think they're friends, they like each other. They keep making that point that, you know, there's no divisions in the squad. They all get on really well. And, you know, being there, you feel that's genuine. It's just it's a pleasure to be there.
Simon, we're talking about great passes in Euro 2020 on the show today. I mean, a player who's familiar with Hotspur Way instantly springs to mind in Harry Kane in terms of his range of passing. Is there a truly outstanding passer, a standout passer, if you like, in this England squad for you?
Sorry, you've caught me here. Just when I was thinking about those chips again. I mean, Calvin Phillips played several terrific passes the other day against, which Gareth Southgate highlighted in his press conference afterwards. And maybe we weren't expecting that from him. You know, we thought he'd be that sort of defensive midfielder. I'm just thinking the midfielder. I mean, Mason Mount's through ball.
Oh,
in the
yeah,
Champions
that's
League
a good final. We said Phillips as well, yeah. And maybe even Henderson were the other ones that sprung to mind for us. But look, Simon, you've got to eat.
No, it's been a pleasure. And just, I feel guilty here because just as, I had a very good question there from Chris about Harry Maguire. And if he was going to play.
What do you think?
Yeah, if I was hedging my bets, I'd say maybe not. And maybe the plan might be to give him a start in the third group game. But whether he comes off the bench tomorrow, if England are defending a lead, who knows? But I'd be I'm hostage to fortune here, but I'd be surprised if he started.
That's what I would go for as well, actually. Simon, thank you very much for joining us on the show, and bon appetit.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Bye for now.
UEFA's England reporter Simon Hart there with the English perspective. Well, let's get the Scottish perspective now by going back to the fan park, and Lindsay Hooper has found some of their fans getting ready for the match.
I'm with Norman at the Football Village, who's donning his kilt here early doors, I guess, for tomorrow ahead of the England game. What are your thoughts about the match coming up?
I think we're going to do okay. I think we might get a draw be a good result for us, because then we can maybe go to Croatia and maybe get a result.
There has been so much talk about Billy Gilmour getting some time. Do you think he will?
I hope so, because I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he's probably a good future for Scotland.
And is that the sort of move that you need to make? Is there a different tactic needed against England compared to the previous game against Czech Republic?
I think we probably need something attacking. So maybe if at least Gilmour or maybe Tierney came back from Arsenal, I think if he came back, that'd be good. We need some attacking play.
I've got to get a score prediction from you just to finish.
I don't want to be negative, but I reckon if we get a draw, maybe 1-1 or 2-2, that'd be good.
Lindsay Hooper on the ground for us, getting the reaction from the Scotland fans. Jackie Oatley with us as well. Jackie, what would it mean to Scotland to get a win at Wembley?
It would mean everything. I think it would be a huge achievement, first of all, given the vast disparity in population, which is an absolute basic. We know about the rivalry between the two sides and how much they have celebrated any victories for opposition against England by other teams over the years in tournaments they haven't qualified for. And we know from Don Goodman's header winning at Wembley back in 1999, even though they lost the playoff, that is still remembered so fondly. It's a massive, massive victory in itself. So I think that says everything. So any kind of goal even that they were to score at Wembley, you would probably feel the reverberations throughout England from Scotland. So it would mean so much to them. Ultimately, they want to get out of this group, and they know that result against the Czech Republic was so disappointing for them, given they didn't exactly help themselves, particularly with the second shit goal and their own decision-making. But I think to be able to compete with England, given the vast array of talent that England have, I mean, they didn't even have the likes of Sancho or Chilwell, even in the matchday squad for the Croatia game. So that just shows the strength and depth that England have. So any kind of result against England would be a fantastic achievement.
Scotland should have Kieran Tierney back fit and available to start. We'll see the teams on Friday in the other match in Group D. Croatia take on the Czech Republic on match day one. The Czechs cruised past Scotland thanks to the aforementioned Schick wonder goal, and Croatia lost to England. Their head coach Zlatko Dalic says he's hoping for an improved performance.
Every single defeat is felt very hard and leaves consequences, be that on Wembley against England or anywhere else. That's not really easy to live with. On the other hand, we know that everything is up to us. We have, therefore, a very good atmosphere. We wanted to achieve good results and a good start, because now we need to elevate ourselves up, and I hope that we can achieve this tomorrow. I am an optimist.
Slatko Dalic, the Croatia head coach there. Well, UEFA's man on Croatia duty is Elvir Islamovic. Elvir joins us from Glasgow now. Welcome to the show, Elvir.
It's my pleasure, guys.
How has Euro 2020 been for you so far?
Okay, we lost against England, so you can imagine how. I mean, it was the first time Croatia ever lost the first group stage match at Euros, so I remember better Euros, to be honest.
And what's the mood in the camp now ahead of this huge game against the Czech Republic? Because, as you mentioned, the fact that Croatia are on 0 points means this is a massive game.
I just came back from the pitch. I just talked to the coach and I just talked to the key defender, Dejan Lovren. And I'm really surprised. They are really, really confident ahead of this match. The atmosphere looks very, very good, great. You wouldn't expect that after the first loss against England. They expected much from that match. But, you know, honestly, all Croatia fans and the public are actually starting to follow this Euro from this second match because there are several reasons for that. Not only England are favorites at this tournament, and they played at home, they played at Wembley. It was an extremely difficult match for Croatia, but somehow the opinion is that it's really much better to be second in our group, you know, because if you're second, you're going to play against the runner-up from the group where Spain, Poland, Sweden and Slovakia are playing. So possibly Slovakia, Sweden or Poland. Otherwise, if you are winner of this group, you play against a group where you can get Germany, France or Portugal. So imagine that. Croatia actually are looking forward to that second place in the group, if possible, of course. But, you know, we lost the first match, so it's really not very good to talk about all calculations until the end.
You're going to jinx it, Elvir. Quickly on the team selection, following your reporting on UEFA.com, there are a number of questions for Zlatko Dalic ahead of this one. It seems to be all areas of the pitch in terms of team selection.
Talking about defense, it's mostly everything is clear there. You know, Dejan Lovren was injured. He picked an injury. He was even doubtful for this tournament, but he miraculously recovered, and he's actually fully fit and ready to play. So that's actually everything is clear there with Lovren and Vida as the central defenders. But the main problem still remains in attack. Talking about the other aspects of the play, I mean, Croatia have, you have to agree with me there, Croatia have probably one of the best midfields at this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Modric, with Kovacic, with Brozovic, who is really in great shape. And you have a Perisic on the wing and Rebic, who is doing a good job in Milan lately. So we still need some power in attack. We need a player like Davor Šuker, if you know what I mean. On the pitch, I just talked to Davor Šuker. He was sitting out on the tribune, watching the training session, and I asked him how is he, and you know, he asked me, what do you think if Croatia is going to win tomorrow? And I said, I'm confident, and I asked him the same. He said, yeah, we should win that. My opinion is, we need that guy. We need somebody like Davor Šuker. We need somebody like Mario Mandžukić. And now the alternatives are. You know, Bruno Petković, who is really playing a great season with Dinamo Zagreb and Croatia during the qualifiers. But, you know, we don't have that star in attack we had before, you know, with Šuker, with Bokšić, with Mandžukić. That's what I miss now.
Elvir, you've taken me right back to Euro 96, talking about Davor Šuker and that lob against Peter Schmeichel at Hillsborough. And then you reeled off those incredible strikers. What has the chat about the Czech Republic been in Croatia? Because they got off to a wonderful start. And of course, we all remember fondly that goal that Patrick Schick scored. So I presume the Croatian players know they're up against a very good opposition.
You know, everybody are talking about Schick these days. It was the same with Davor Šuker 1996. This goal, I mean, I was really shocked, you know, after Schick scored. It was really one of the best goals at Euros, definitely. And all Croatia players are aware of that. And but, you know, they're talking not only about Schick. I talked to several players in the last few days. And they were telling me that the Czech Republic are really a really, really good team. They're really compact. They're playing a really solid defense. They're very fast in attack. So I also asked Ivan Perisic, because he was playing as well 4 years, 5 years ago at Euro 2016 in France. Also, Croatia and Czech Republic were in the same group, and then Croatia led 2-0 until 75th minute, and then conceded two goals late in the match. But it was a completely different match, and Perisic told me, yeah, we analyzed everything, and this Czech Republic squad is much better than it was 5 years ago, and it will be much more difficult for Croatia to dominate, to score. And the other thing is, we are lacking of self-confidence, because, you know, in the last 10 matches, Croatia only won twice.
Well, let's see how they get on at Hampden Park. Elvir, finally, we're talking about great passes today, really in honour of Kevin De Bruyne's super showing for Belgium. Who is, this seems a rather easy question, actually, but who is the best passer, do you think, yeah, in the Croatia team?
The goalkeeper.
Very good.
Okay, that was an easy one.
I don't need to tell you that, but you know, every time I look, I'm covering this national team for 17, 18 years now, and I'm with Luka from his beginning, playing for Croatia in 2006 after the World Cup in Germany, and this is miraculous career. He's almost 36, and he's still key player. He's still the best, doing some crazy things on the pitch. His every ball has eyes, so you know, I really enjoy watching him, and it will be a big hole when he retired from playing. I mean, Kovacic is also a brilliant player in the midfield, but you know, Modric is, for me, he's the best player of all times for Croatia. I mean, definitely.
And this is what the Czech players have all been talking about, Croatia's possession football. I think they really mean Luka Modric. OK, our Croatia correspondent and Davor Šuker's best mate, Elvir Islamović. Elvir, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Brilliant stuff from Elvir, as always. We'll be speaking to him, of course, again on the show. Let's go to Group E now, where Sweden will face Slovakia in St. Petersburg. Both teams will come into this with confidence after good opening games, and a victory for Slovakia would book them a round of 16 spot. They take on a Sweden side, Jackie Oatley, that could barely touch the ball against Spain the other day, but they got the 0-0 draw. Christopher Olsen in midfield said, "I don't think I've ever managed as few passes in a game before as that one." Do you suspect they're going to, and can they change their approach for this one?
Touching a football during a game is vastly overrated. I mean, who needs to do that? They just don't need you. I mean, they did have a couple of big chances in the game, it has to be said, even though they didn't really see too much of the possession. But in this game, they're not going to be passing the parking the bus. I'm told they're feeling pretty confident about progressing, and they're very much looking forward to this match. Should be very different to the Spain game. Marcus Baer may drop out forward, and Dejan Kulusevski is finally available after a negative COVID test. He may well come in up front. Seb Larsson may well shift into the centre for this game. Slovakia, though, hit by positive tests, and centre-half Denis Vavro is out as a result. Also a positive test for a member of the coaching staff. So tricky time for them. But they're also feeling pretty confident after their surprise win against Poland. So definitely a game to look forward to.
Certainly is. An interesting quote from Stefan Tarkovic, the Slovakian coach, Rob, as well. This one really stood out. He said, "I think Sweden will have more quality than Poland." Now, maybe he's just trying to galvanise his troops ahead of what is a game. And then he added, "This is a new challenge for us, but still we believe we will be successful again." And I like that optimism. Remember, Slovakia reached the last 16 at Euro 2016, ended up bumping into a very good Germany team and went out. And this would be a huge moment for them. They win in St. Petersburg. They are through with a game to spare. It's a massive night potentially for Slovakian football.
Yeah, Alexander Isak is set to keep his place in the team as well. Slovakia with that brilliant win over Poland. Let's see if they can repeat the trick and put their place in the knockout stages. Jackie Oatley, thank you very much for joining us on the show this evening.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And Chris, it's been good to get your company as well. Who's winning, Chris? What do you reckon, England, Scotland?
I mean, that is an impossible question to answer.
Come on.
England. I think,
Jackie?
I think you have to go with England.
Jackie?
England, Grealish to shine. He is bang up for this.
Okay, thank you very much, the pair of you, and thank you very much for listening as well. That is all we have time for. Remember that you can listen to the Euro Show live every match night of the competition. You could do so on the official Euro 2020 app or on the website. That's euro2020.com. and you can subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be keeping you up to date with everything Euro 2020.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.